thought of Rex as a human until yesterday, did you? The realization and the associated surge of guilt gave me a stomach ache. Why are people built this way? Why do we give power to those we admire, regardless of whether we know them personally? Our admiration turns them into a thing, a two-dimensional representation of our hopes and expectations, rather than a living, breathing person. Shame on you, Abby. Great, now I'm back to shame.
You have no idea,
he said, chuckling again, the sound bitter. Okay, you're right. Anyone can be a fool or look like a fool or act like a fool. I withdrew my hand from his back and leaned my elbows on the bar, staring forward at the orange Halloween lights zigzagging across the shelves. But if it's any consolation, at least you don't have a fly obsessed with your feet. He breathed a surprised laugh. This one sounded genuinely amused, which had been my goal, and I felt his eyes on my profile.
You're good at that.
It's a natural gift. I didn't do anything to my feet, and that fly is obsessed.
No.
He laughed again, elbowing my arm in a move that would have sent me into an apocalyptic fit as a teenager, but which merely caused a warm burst in my stomach at present.
You're good at distracting folks from self-pity, lifting their spirits.
All bartenders are. I twisted to look at him, leaving just one elbow on the bar and cupping my cheek in my palm. At least, good bartenders are. A good bartender will let you know when it's time to stop drinking without ever saying a thing. Sometimes people just need an ear, a placeholder for... That's it. A placeholder. That's what he was asking for. I already know how to do that. I do it every time I go to work, right here. But did I want to be Rex's placeholder? Keeping the bench warm for the woman who would eventually have his heart? Why not? You don't really know him. Given how disastrous my first marriage was, it wasn't like I wanted his heart or anyone else's for myself. And even if you did want it, and somehow through divine intervention won it, think of all the pressure, the changes, the upheaval. But this business proposition would have an end date. I would decide when it ended, and then I could go back to my normal life.
A placeholder for what?
Rex drummed his fingers on the bar to get my attention, and suddenly he refilled my vision. I must have spaced out. Sorry, I was just thinking.
Good. Think about it. Take your time. No rush.
He grabbed another pretzel, adding,
There's no harm in thinking.
Chapter 8. Those who don't believe in magic will never find it. Roald Dahl. What am I doing? I muttered to myself, swallowing the tangle of nerves in my throat and gripping the steering wheel too tight. A gate already decked out in Christmas garlands, lights, and red bows, as well as a guard looking anything but cheerful, loomed before me. I didn't have the mental energy to judge the preemptive seasonal decorations, though I usually would. Decorating for Christmas before Halloween was akin to buying a wedding dress before having a fiancé, is my opinion. Not that you asked. But enough about my festive biases. In order to get through the gate, I had to get through the guard, and I wasn't 100% sure I was at the right place. My car's GPS had led me astray plenty of times in the past. I wasn't even sure I wanted to be here. Rex had left the Boozy Rancher without eating soup or a sandwich, likely because Walker no longer looked inclined to make him either. But he did write down the address for the rehearsal dinner tonight.
He also told me he'd arranged for a mobile detailing service to clean my car tomorrow morning and would be in touch about getting the door handle fixed before he left on Sunday, no matter what I decided about his proposal. The news about the car was timely because Kaylee cornered me as soon as I'd arrived home, lying in wait outside my apartment, and wanting to know why, in holy hell, the car had smelled like a vomitorium. I didn't ask how she'd know what a vomitorium smelled like. I think we can all agree it would smell something like the inside of our car. I told her the truth. I drove a drunk friend home and he threw up in the car. But don't worry, because he's sending a mobile unit to have it washed and detailed in the morning. By the way, can I borrow the car tonight? She'd agreed immediately. Go for it. I'm not driving that puke-mobile again until after it's been cleaned. She hadn't noticed the passenger side door handle, but I pointed it out, promising it would be fixed soon. Presently, I didn't have to roll down the window as I approached the prematurely festive gate and the sullen guard because it was already open. Smiling as he approached my stinky car, I said, "Hi there." He did not smile.
"Name?"
My smile fell. Abigail McNerney? I squirmed in my seat as he peered at me and then lowered his eyes to the tablet in his hands, scanning the screen. I had no idea whether or not I was on any guest list, even if this was the right place. Not wanting him to think I was a party crasher, I blurted, "I'm not sure if I'm on the list. I was just invited this afternoon by my, friend. He..."
"You have ID?"
he asked without looking up. "My name is there?" He nodded, still not looking up.
"ID, please."
With relieved fingertips, I pulled my driver's license out of my wallet and handed it over. He took it, read it, looked at me, then examined my car before saying,
"When I open the gate, keep going straight until you get to the circle drive. There's a valet for your car. Leave the keys on the dash."
"Oh, okay. Thanks." He'd already turned and was walking back to the little gatehouse. He must have pressed a button because the gate swung open not a second later. Giving him a little wave for no reason other than it seemed like the polite thing to do, I followed the winding road. Sure enough, a little ways down the driveway became a circle, and beyond that was the biggest house I'd ever seen. It was legit a mansion. It reminded me of something out of a Jane Austen movie, just with Texas sensibilities. Turrets lit from below stretched into the night sky, and it appeared to be built entirely of some kind of pale stone, currently shadowed except where the ground lights made it glow white. The entrance was framed by a big arch, and the single ginormous wooden door looked like it belonged on a castle. The glazing on the windows alone must have cost a fortune. And the chimney piece... "What am I doing?" I murmured, marking maybe the 100th time I'd whispered the words to myself since leaving my apartment. Rolling up the window, I cut the engine and placed the keys on the dash. I glanced down at my puffy black winter coat and dress. I owned two dresses. This black one I had on, which I wore to funerals, formal occasions at night, and Christmas service, and a pink one for Easter, afternoon weddings, and bridal showers. They were almost exactly the same, except for their color. A hemline that fell just below the knee, a flowy skirt, a wide, fitted waist, a scoop neck that was what my mother would have called mildly immodest, and no sleeves. A serviceable black dress that could be dressed up or down with a wrap or sweater or jewelry or a push-up bra or heels. I wore the push-up bra, glad I'd done so as I watched a woman in a sexy gold backless dress disappear inside on the arm of a man in a tux. I'd also opted for high heels, a pair of 3.5-inch black spiked pumps with red soles, basically new in the box I'd found at a Goodwill store just after Christmas last year. I never had the chance to wear them anywhere, and I reasoned that it didn't matter if I towered over almost everyone else. Rex was 6'6". And if he were 5'6", what difference did it make? I never went anywhere fancy, and the shoes wanted to be worn. And yet, thinking about the woman's stylish gold dress just now, I wondered if serviceable plus cleavage plus secondhand heels would be enough. I'd spent the later part of the afternoon trying to argue myself out of taking Rex up on his generous, too-good-to-be-true offer. I wanted to help him, and the money would definitely help me. Here I was, 28, no family, no security, no savings, still burdened with tons of debt left over from my divorce. I was just 2 years away from paying off the court-ordered amount, but I still hadn't paid back Walker and Kaylee the money they'd loaned me to claw out of the hole my ex-husband and my stupidity had left me in. Even if Rex were a loathsome slag and I didn't want to do him any favors, the money he offered for one fake date was insane for a single night's work. $2,000 for two nights of standing around would make a huge difference to my peace of mind. I'd finally be able to start paying back Walker. So why hadn't I jumped at the chance, even if it was too good to be true? Studying the McMansion, now I knew the answer. I don't belong here, I whispered. Heaving an audible breath, I reached for my keys, intent on leaving, but then flinched back, yelping inelegantly, as a series of quick knocks rapped on my window, surprising the bejesus out of me. I pressed a hand to my chest and turned wide eyes out my window, finding a man just suddenly there. A man in a black wool coat and dark suit with his hand moving toward the outside handle of the door.
Gail McNerney, open this door.
A man's voice demanded. In the next second, he'd bent at the waist, his arm along the roof as he braced himself and peeked in the window. I gaped, blinking at the face of a man who resembled a boy I used to know. Cyrus?
Abigail?
He drawled, lifting a black eyebrow over an emerald-colored eye.
Why are you just sitting there? Are you getting out or what?
I laughed in wonder, unclicking my seatbelt and opening the door. He stepped back, giving me room to exit, but not waiting until I'd closed the door to wrap me in a hug. What are you doing here? I returned his hug, still laughing. Disbelief had me pulling away so I could look at him again. He held my hands out and looked me over.
Woman, look at you. You're gorgeous.
Well, look at yourself. You're gorgeous. And he was. He looked like the movie star he'd become, with his dark hair styled so elegantly, green eyes glittering under starlight, and square jaw with the little cleft at the chin. The black stubble dotting his cheeks only lent him extra swagger, like a pirate. So I said, "You look like a pirate."
"Thank you,"
he grinned, as though I'd given him the most superlative compliment ever imagined, and dropped my hands while offering his elbow.
"And did you notice? I'm finally taller than you."
Straightening my back, I said, "If I weren't in heels, maybe by a half inch."
"Two, at least."
I laughed, shaking my head, unable to believe Cyrus was just suddenly here. I supposed time really did change people. Or maybe time gave past events less importance and weight. "What are you doing here? Did Rex invite you too?" I asked.
No. Rex didn't invite me.
He cast me a sidelong look.
"I'm part of the wedding party. We just got back from the church and everyone's supposed to be inside mingling before dinner. I was walking in before you pulled up."
"You're part of the wedding party?" All at once, I recalled why I was here and what tonight was, a rehearsal dinner, and without me noticing, we were walking toward the house. Cyrus had led me away from my car, and now we were almost to the big castle door. And then I remembered what I just said about Rex inviting Cyrus too, which implied that Rex had invited me, which meant...
"Do you know who's getting married tomorrow?"
he asked.
"Whose rehearsal dinner this is?"
I ducked my head and admitted, I do not. I was invited just this afternoon and I didn't ask.
And Rex invited you, I know.
You know?
Oh, yes. I know.
I stared straight ahead, working to squash my skipping heart. Something about his tone had me wondering if he really did know. Rex had said I couldn't tell anyone, but had he told Cyrus? Before I could debate how to best respond, the castle door opened and a man in a black suit, black tie, and white shirt motioned us forward. He held a tablet similar to the guard at the gate.
Names, please?
I opened my mouth to answer, but Cyrus covered my hand on his elbow, speaking for both of us.
Cyrus Malcolm and Abigail McNerney, Rex McMurtry's plus one.
Not sparing me a glance, the man smiled at Cyrus.
Of course. Mr. McMurtry has just arrived. Champagne and caviar on the heated terrace right through those doors. Gift bags will be placed in your car before you depart. Please leave your coats with the attendant. Thank you, Mr. Malcolm. Have a pleasant evening.
Cyrus gave the man a nod while I swallowed around a renewed bubble of nerves. Champagne. Caviar. Heated terraces and attendants for coats? What the heck am I doing here? I allowed myself to be led to a woman dressed in a black suit, black tie, and white shirt who must have been the attendant, as she took my coat and passed me a ticket. I placed it in my black wrist zipper bag while she attended to Cyrus. Like the fella at the door, she only seemed to have eyes for him, and that suited me just fine. Being invisible helped me relax a little. If walking around with Rex was anything like walking around with Cyrus, I'd basically just be a warm, faceless body. A placeholder. My confidence grew. I can do placeholder. I turned in the direction of the promised heated terrace and craned my neck to sneak a peek, trying not to take note of the massive, arching, glossy marble entryway I currently stood within, or the arrangements of fresh winter blossoms lining the hall. Looking straight ahead would keep me from appearing like an overwhelmed a country bumpkin.
May I?
Cyrus, standing at my left side, offered his elbow again. I gave him my best serene smile and nodded, slipping my hand over the fine material of his suit. After a few steps, he leaned to my ear and whispered,
"You remember Jason Kepler from high school?"
Yes. It took a moment, but I remembered him. Jason Kepler had been on the football team with Cyrus and Rex, but I couldn't recall much else about him other than he seemed to be a nice enough guy, and his grandfather had been buried in a Lincoln spruce midnight blue casket with white velvet interior. My mother had been exceedingly proud of upselling his surviving family on the casket.
This is his engagement party. He's marrying Amy Ahrensberg, the singer. This is her house.
I nodded once, keeping my eyes forward while I processed this information. I barely remembered Jason, but everyone knew who Amy Ahrensberg was. Her last three albums had been huge all over the world. Cyrus's gaze seemed to inspect my profile as we navigated around a giant arrangement of poinsettias and evergreen garlands. When I said nothing, he whispered,
"You don't seem surprised."
I sent him a quick glance. "I am surprised. How'd they even meet?" He chuckled, drawing my attention again. I found him watching me with a sort of sly look.
"Rex, of course. Everyone meets the woman they're going to marry through Rex."
Giving nothing of my thoughts away, since my thoughts were presently tripping all over themselves, I faced forward again as we approached a staircase leading down to the terrace. The noise of conversation reached a crescendo and was entwined with classical music while I found myself looking slightly down at the promised heated terrace. Maybe 100 or more people, all dressed in formal attire, milled around the space, forming little groups sipping on champagne. Like the rest of the entry, the six-step staircase and the terrace floor were polished marble. But instead of black and white checkerboard, everything was crisp white. The walls, the long sheer drapes, even the window frames. Decorations, food, and people were the only source of color. A few big and tall fellows were scattered in with the crowd, but I spotted Rex immediately. A jolt of warmth weaving itself into a tight ball in my stomach. His back was to us, and his brown head rose above almost everyone else, his wide shoulders and back straight beneath an elegantly cut dark suit jacket.
"I see Rex over there."
Cyrus lifted his chin.
"Shall we?"
Breathing in through my nose, I inclined my head and superglued on an aloof expression. "I'll follow you." Ignoring Cyrus's frequent glances while he steered us toward Rex, I reminded myself that it didn't matter if I belonged here with all these fancy people, because I wasn't really here. I was a placeholder, a stand-in, a fact firmly cemented as Cyrus was frequently stopped, hugged, smiled at, and talked to while I might as well have been furniture, which suited me just fine. By the time we made it to Rex, 20 or so minutes later, Cyrus's smile looked forced, and I was almost fully at ease. He glanced at me one more time, placing his hand over mine on his elbow and whispering,
"Wow, you did great."
I fought the urge to laugh, whispering back, "I didn't do anything, but smile politely and say nothing."
"And look stunning. Here we are."
Cyrus reached up and tapped Rex on the shoulder, smoothly insinuating both of us into the circle of people gathered around Rex as the big guy turned. My lungs tightened with a surge of something. Like if anticipation and nausea and excitement and fear had an orgy, giving birth to a baby, and that baby had cold hands that could reach into your chest and squeeze your lungs. Yeah, like that. As Rex faced us, what I noticed first was how this here was the granite version of Rex from high school. Rex T.W. McMurtry, slightly removed, intensity behind his hazel eyes replaced with a disinterested gruffness. But then, as his attention settled on Cyrus, a crack formed. Recognition gave way to a glimmer of relief, and sardonic humor peeked through. The faintest hint of the Rex from my apartment, and the guy who'd propositioned me earlier in the day. Human Rex. He placed a hand on Cyrus's shoulder, the corner of his luscious lips angling upward by scant millimeters.
"You get lost?"
Ugh. I loved his voice. It was so deep, baritone.
"Took us forever to get across the room,"
Cyrus grumbled, curling his fingers around mine and lowering his arm so that we held hands. The movement had Rex glancing at me. He was the first person to spare me even a glance since we'd walked in. Immediately he stood straighter, the mask of affability slipping away. His eyes widened as they moved over me.
"Abby."
My name sounded a little winded, and Rex stepped forward, his hand coming to my arm as he turned his back on the circle of people. On autopilot, I dropped Cyrus's hand and allowed Rex to steer me to the side, pulling me in front of him such that we faced each other, and only each other. He stared at me, his mouth open like words were on the tip of his tongue. I waited for him to speak. He didn't. One would think after all the epic stare-downs he'd administered over the last 2 days, during our short time together, his prolonged looking wouldn't affect me. But it did. I couldn't place these stares. I didn't know what they meant, what he was thinking. He looked absorbed, deep in thought, and yet completely focused. As usual, the longer he persisted in silence, the more uncomfortable I felt. Faintly, I heard Cyrus clear his throat. Unable to bear it any longer, I said, "Fancy meeting you here." A whisper of a smile lit behind his eyes, and he bent toward me, stepping into my space. I sucked in a spiky breath as his warm body brushed against my front and his lips found my ear.
"I'm so glad you came,"
he whispered. The words elicited a shiver. Then he pulled away and said to Cyrus,
"Thank you."
I didn't hear if Cyrus made any response. I was too busy working to recover from the pin-prickly sensation of his hot breath falling on my neck. Nor did he give me time to fully recover before deftly wrapping an arm around my waist and pressing me to his side. I fit perfectly, and the arm was the only reason I didn't melt into a pile of goo on the floor.
"You don't have champagne,"
he said, his hazel eyes warmly inspecting me. Lowering his voice, he bent to my ear again and said,
"Something for me to remedy."
I shivered again, my heart going crazy, and I tumbled headfirst into a hot flash when the loud minority wackadoodle part of my personality made a list of all the other items I wouldn't mind Rex remedying. But then the silent majority brain stakeholder tugged on the proverbial reins before the list grew too long. Or illicit. "Stop it, Abby. Get yourself together. What the heck was wrong with me? I was an adult woman, for hootenanny's sake, not a lust-sick teenager." So he'd pressed me to his side with his big, muscly, scrumptious arm. So what? So he was good at sounding sexy without meaning to. So what? So he smelled fantastic. So what? So you're doing a favor for Rex. Being paid to be here and play a part. That's what. Don't make selfish lists or lose your wits. I'd barely managed to force down the rising blush when Rex used his leverage on me to turn us both away from his circle and toward the tables in the center of the long room. Inhaling a steadying breath, I followed where he led, the room parting for us. Unlike Cyrus, people didn't stop Rex to engage in chit-chat. Looking up at his face, the reason was obvious. His eyes were slightly narrowed, and he wore an expression I'd called the fuck-off-not-now face when we were in middle school. Eventually, we stopped next to a tall table covered in full champagne glasses. Releasing me, he plucked one from the table and held it out.
"I didn't think you'd come,"
he murmured, placing the drink in my hand. His eyes moved over my face. The effect of his pointed attentions, plus the previous placement of his arm, had my stomach swirling all over again. So I brain chanted, "It's an act, Abby. Pretend. Play your part." It seemed like a low-risk way to give this a try. I smiled, working to shake off the whirlwind of hot and cold racing through my system. His eyebrows pulled together slightly.
"Give this a try."
I widened my eyes with meaning. When his confusion persisted, I stepped forward, successfully resisted the urge to sniff him, and whispered, "You know, the fake date thing." Leaning away, I found he'd dropped his eyes to the floor, his smile waxy as it waned.
"Ah, yes, that thing."
Rex nodded. He took a deep breath. He nodded again. Inspecting his ticking jaw, I frowned. "Is there anything wrong?"
"No, not at all,"
he said lightly and lifted his attention to someplace over my head.
"Your timing was impeccable."
"Was it?" I sipped the champagne. Liking the taste, I took another drink.
"Yes, it was."
He slipped his hand into mine and kept us connected by threading our fingers together. "How so?" I licked my lips and then took another drink, surveying Rex's face. His marble exterior I knew so well had returned. I supposed he was also playing a part, and the thought helped settle the remainder of my jitters. We could pretend together. I found gruff Rex much easier to navigate as fake date Abby than new Rex. New Rex made me want to be real Abby. And real Abby had no business getting real with any Rex. His gaze settled on me, a caustic-looking curve on his lips.
People always want to set me up.
Set you up?
With their sisters, cousins, nieces, friends.
But no mothers? What's wrong with their mothers? I went to take another drink of my champagne and found the glass empty. When did that happen?
That's a great question.
His mouth tugged to one side, the curve no longer caustic, and he chuckled.
I'm glad you came, Abby.
Me too. I placed my empty flute on the tray with the full ones and scooped up a second glass. This champagne is delicious. He chuckled again, his eyelids lowering by half as he watched me take another drink.
I can't, shouldn't have any. So I'll have to take your word for it.
Oh, do I get to be your liquor sampler at these things? I never drink.
Really? And you work at a bar.
But that's just it, right? People who work at Disneyland don't go to Disneyland. When is the last time you watched a football game for fun? To enjoy it? I glanced at the glass in my hand, finding it half empty. Maybe I was just thirsty. I promised myself I'd sip the remainder, but I'd be lying if I said the champagne hadn't been welcome. For one thing, the act of talking to and standing close to Rex while he donned this sexy suit didn't seem quite so disruptive to my brain function while I drank champagne. And for another thing, I was no longer feeling angsty or inadequate about my dress. Social lubricant, indeed.
I can't remember the last time I watched a football game for any reason other than work.
Oh, the irony, am I right? I tipped my glass toward him, grinning because I felt like grinning. Once something you enjoy becomes a job, you stop doing the thing for enjoyment. His eyes fastened to my smile.
I still enjoy football.
Right, just like I, clearly, still enjoy champagne. But it's also my job. Rex gently relieved me of my second glass, which, despite the earlier pledge to myself, had also inexplicably become empty.
Champagne is your job?
Booze is my job. I patted his chest. And now you are too. Rex gave me a quizzical grin, his gaze moving over my face as though mesmerized, or maybe conflicted. He looked not at all impervious or gruff. He looked real. Meanwhile, I was experiencing that initial thrill of warmth and euphoria that accompanied being buzzed. A sweet happiness. A cozy sinking and settling into a new reality bordered by possibility and optimism, where everything is funnier and everyone is better looking and happiness seems so entirely within reach. No wonder turning water into wine was the first miracle in the New Testament. Jesus for the win. Or, I guess, Mary, since she'd asked him to do it. Rex licked his lips and he opened his mouth. But before any words arrived, we were interrupted by someone tugging on his shoulder and someone else gripping my arm. Oh my God, Gail? Abigail McNerney. Cyrus said it was you and it's you! A medium-sized woman wrapped her arms around me, thereby forcing me to let go of Rex's hand. It's me! Rachel, remember? From lunch. We sat at the same table sometimes. Oh, yes, hi. I nodded profusely, remembering Rachel at once, but not because we'd shared the same lunch table a few times. Rachel McQuaid, the girl I'd swapped seats with at our graduation, so she could sit next to Rex. It's okay, I changed my hair. She flipped the ends of her black bob, giggling. This is my husband, Tom Marie. I changed my last name, so I'm Rachel Marie now. Tom, this is Gail. I turned to find a tall, nice-looking man with kind brown eyes holding out his hand. We quickly exchanged pleasantries as Rachel Marie explained. Gail went to high school with us. Then to me, she said, "Tom and Rex played ball together in college. That's how we met." She gestured to her husband. "I see," I said, even though I didn't. Maybe she and Rex had become friendly the summer after our senior year? She beamed at Rex, then at me. "It's so awesome you two are together." "Rachel," Tom said, a gentle rebuke. "I always thought you two would be cute together. You're both so tall." She laughed, ignoring her husband and reaching up to tap my shoulder teasingly. "I should have let you sit next to Rex at graduation, but it all worked out for the best. If I hadn't dated Rex, then I never would have met my Tom." Oh, so Rachel and Rex dated. Oddly, this tidbit did nothing to deflate my champagne buzz. Perhaps because Rachel had truly been a sweetheart in high school. I kind of liked the idea of someone like Rachel ending up with Rex. He deserved a sweetheart. Tom smiled at his wife indulgently, and then it turned apologetic as he faced me and Rex.
"So, how'd you two reconnect?"
he asked, obviously anxious to change the subject away from their origin story. Rex glanced at me, and I took that as my cue to start earning my $1,000. "Well, it's kind of a crazy story." Rachel's grin widened. "I can't wait to hear it." "I'm a bartender at this little place downtown, and oh, what's the name? We love downtown Austin. So quirky, right, Tom?" Rachel appealed to her husband. It's called the Boozy Rancher," I said. "The sign has a cowboy, and yes, I know that one. Okay, so what happened?" Rachel softly poked at my arm, prodding me to continue the story. "Okay, so we were an hour away from closing when in walks this guy." The back of my hand lightly hit Rex's stomach, and I'd planned to withdraw it after the playful gesture. I really did. But instead, I let it linger, my knuckles moving up and down his shirt front and his abdominal muscles. I don't know what possessed me to do it, only that once I started with the knuckle-stomach caress, I couldn't seem to stop.
"So you walked into her bar?"
Tom asked Rex, looking delighted. Rex nodded and caught my errant hand, bringing it to his lips and kissing the back of it.
"Yes, I was with a priest and a rabbi,"
he said stoically. Tom and Rachel laughed while I struggled to concentrate under the heady burden of Rex's hot, soft lips brushing against my knuckles. "And the rest is history," I said, a little breathlessly. Rachel made a face of disappointment. "I thought you said it was a crazy story."
"Rachel,"
came another of Tom's placid rebukes.
"Don't you think it's crazy that Rex walked into the bar where she works? That's pretty random."
"I don't think it's crazy," Rachel said, crossing her arms. "Now, if there'd been a bar fight or something..." I snapped the fingers Rex didn't hold and pointed at Rachel. "Great idea. I'll add that to the story. Or there's a robbery."
"Yes, add that,"
Tom laughed.
"Rex walks in while you're being robbed and he saves you."
"Or he's being robbed and I save him, That's good." Rachel nodded, clapping her hands together. I faced Rex, grinning up at him. "You don't mind, do you, darling? If every time I tell this story, I make it crazier and crazier?" Rex gave my knuckles another kiss, a hint of a smile peeking out from behind where he still held my hand.
"Whatever makes you happy, babe."
Babe. I found myself transfixed, caught in the very real snare of his pretend term of endearment, and his pretend happy gaze, and his pretend kisses on my hand, and our pretend closeness, while his gorgeous hazel eyes pretend twinkled down at me. A lovely but confusing warmth stretched and bloomed in my stomach, coiling and uncoiling, asking the champagne to dance. Our eyes remained locked, and the amusement behind his features became something markedly less benign, and quite a bit hotter. Or I guess, pretend hotter. He's so good at this. Oh my goodness, is this what it's going to be like every time we go someplace? Honestly, Rex, fake acting like he adored me, felt a lot stronger than two glasses of champagne. Aww! Rachel's appreciative sound snapped me out of my stupor, and I tore my eyes from his, blinking our audience back into focus. You two are the absolute cutest. I am so happy for you both. So relieved to see Rex with someone as awesome as you, Gale. I managed a smile, but this time I gave in to the blush because I was now legit breathless. I couldn't fight the surge of heat cresting over my cheeks while also concentrating on my lungs, keeping myself from panting like, oh, you know, any animal in heat.
Abby, not Gale,
Rex said, lowering my hand but still holding it. I felt his eyes on me as he added softly,
she goes by Abby now.
Chapter 9.
Yes, of course duct tape works in a near vacuum. Duct tape works anywhere. Duct tape is magic and should be worshipped. Andy Weir, The Martian. I like to think of myself as a master at non-reaction. Rex's playful touches, his long, hot looks, his cornucopia of endearments, babe, beautiful, dearest, sugar, had all required me to up my game. For every one of his adorable, sexy, sweet assaults, I'd had to maneuver, evade, and cope until I'd finally settled into a rhythm. I bobbed and weaved, shutting down my heart before it took his pretending too seriously. Several times I had no choice but to go on the offensive. He kissed the back of my hand, and I kissed his cheek. He kissed my cheek, and I kissed his neck. He kissed my neck while standing behind me, his warm, solid front pressed to my back, an arm wrapped around my middle, a hand on my stomach. And I excused myself to the bathroom and did deep breathing exercises. After dinner, Rex stayed with me until I had my coat and my car was pulled around, making me promise to message him in the morning. Slipping into my car, exhausted, I exhaled my relief. I then immediately regretted the exhale because my car reeked of vomit on the inhale. Gagging, I rolled down the window and held my breath, freezing air pummeling my face all the way home. I didn't mind. The frigid breeze, a godsend, clearing my head and heart of residual heady warmth and replacing it with cold sobriety. Could I do this again? I had no idea. Did I want to? Heck yeah. And thus was my dilemma. As I programmed Rex's number into my phone, as I went to sleep, as I awoke super early and rode my bike to the pottery studio to finish up the cauldron mugs and special orders, as I ate my breakfast at the picnic table outside the studio just past 10:30 a.m., I couldn't make up my mind about what to do. I needed to call Rex. He didn't have my number, and I promised him I'd call. If you do this, before you agree, you have to tell Rex about Declan and your divorce. My stomach soured at the thought. But then the sick feeling suddenly dissipated. Perhaps Declan was, for once in his miserable life, the answer. Yanking out my phone before I could give the matter any more thought, I selected Rex's cell number and dialed. Yes, once Rex hears the truth, he'll change his mind about you, and then the decision will be made for you. Nice! Rex answered on the fourth ring.
Hello?
He sounded wary, and I heard metal clinking against metal in the background. He was probably in a gym or lifting weights. "It's Abby."
"Oh, hi."
He no longer sounded wary.
"Did you get home okay?"
"I did, thanks. So I'm calling about tonight." I clicked the lid back on my Tupperware and slid it into my food sack.
"Are you coming?"
A door opened and closed on his side of the call. The sound of the weight machines abruptly stifled. He must have left the gym or gone somewhere more private. "First, I need to tell you about me. I mean, I need to tell you something about my past that is likely to make you rescind your offer." Talking about this subject always made my stomach turn, and I was determined to avoid sharing unnecessary details. But I wouldn't avoid the truth or taking responsibility for my stupid decisions.
"Oh, okay."
I gathered a deep breath for courage and mentally distanced myself from what I was about to say. "Here it is. I am divorced. My ex-husband was a con artist and stole a lot of money from a bunch of important people. When we divorced, a portion of his overall debts were given to me, and I had to declare bankruptcy. I also had to go to jail for a short while since they thought I was in on the scam, but when they figured out I was just an idiot who'd also been conned, they let me out. I've been paying back the money for going on 9 years, and I still have 2 years left." Unsurprisingly, Rex was silent as he absorbed this. Checking my watch, I gave him a moment, then added around a growing thickness in my throat. "I completely understand if this information changes things. If we were to go through with your plan and get married, my past would undoubtedly come out and it would look bad for you."
"No. No. Wait, let me..."
I heard him breathe lightly.
"Give me a minute."
"Sure." I pressed the phone to my ear, using my shoulder, and zipped up my food sack, checked around the table to ensure I hadn't left anything, then meandered back inside the studio. Giving my studio mate Paul a friendly chin tilt, I walked to my backpack and stuffed the sack inside. Other than me and Paul, no one else had opted to spend their Saturday morning in the studio. Over the summer, this place would be packed during the weekend, but fall had been unexpectedly and uncharacteristically cold this year. I imagined very few people wanted to spend Saturday in an unheated studio space, dipping their hands in chilly water and working to form cold clay.
"Abby."
I straightened, holding the phone with my hand again. "Rex?"
"I have questions."
I frowned. "Okay?"
"You said you've been paying the money back for 9 years?"
"Yes."
"That means you were 20 when you divorced?"
"I was 18 when I filed for divorce and went to jail for 2 months," I whispered, turning my back to Paul. "The bankruptcy was settled the year after." Rex went silent again, but just for a moment.
"How old were you when you got married?"
18. The marriage only lasted 3 months. Even through the phone, I got the sense he had a million questions. Something about his pauses felt heavy, like he was weighing his words and they were a ton each.
"You knew about the con?"
he asked. "Nope. I thought he was real." I'd been so colossally, monumentally, breathtakingly stupid and trusting and naive. He made an abrupt, grunting sound.
"We'll discuss it tonight."
That gave me pause. I'd been so certain he would call everything off. "Are you sure? What if we're photographed together? Or someone..."
"Other than your past, is there any reason you don't want to come?"
"I mean, no, but..."
"Good. I'll text you the address. Oh, and I'm supposed to tell you the theme is Cowboy Cowgirl Christmas, whatever the fuck that means."
This last part was grumbled and pulled a smile from me. Rex had always been one who cussed freely. It was usually said on a grumble, like now. I have boots and jeans, no problem. But Rex...
We'll talk tonight. See you at 6. Sit on the groom's side.
My mouth still open to lodge a protest. The telltale sound of Rex ending the call clicked through to my side. Rearing back, I stared at the screen of my phone, frowning at his abrupt and gruff goodbye. Actually, he hadn't said goodbye at all, had he? He just hung up, without giving me the chance to say anything at all. As I frowned at the phone, his promised message came through with the address, but then he sent three others. Rex.
Boots, jeans, and red and green flannel is what I was told.
Rex.
Hats also okay.
Rex.
I'll meet you outside the church at 6. Be there.
Well, good luck with the opening. I scooched to the right side of the back seat, giving Henry an encouraging smile as he pulled up to the curb. I'm sure you'll do great.
Hey, thanks, Abby.
His blue eyes met mine in the rearview mirror, and I opened the back door.
And good luck to you, too.
Hooking my mouth to the side, I laughed. I'm gonna need it, right? Henry also laughed and turned around as I unfolded from the car.
You'll do great. Have more faith in yourself,
he called after me. I bent down so I could peer into his car one more time. I will. No more doubting. I'll get those things made for the holiday markets, and I'm so sorry for your cat. After 17 years, that must have been so hard. Henry gave me a sad smile.
Hey, what can we do? Life is fragile.
It is, I agreed, feeling his angst, but hoping my commiseration helped in some small way. His smile brightened as we swapped stares, and he gave me a friendly nod, which I returned. Then I shut the door, feeling a bit better about everything in general.
Who was that?
Ah! I sucked in a startled breath, flailing as I spun to find Rex standing directly behind me on the sidewalk. His eyes were focused beyond my shoulder, frowning at the taillights of the Nissan Leaf pulling back into traffic. Gosh, you scared me. My hand on my chest, I chuckled as I shook my head, working to dispel the spike in adrenaline.
Who was that?
He repeated. Rex's hazel glare shifted to my face, two frown lines etched deeply between his eyebrows. I gulped. What? Who?
That guy who dropped you off.
Oh, his name is Henry.
A friend of yours?
Henry? No, I just met him. He's an Uber driver.
You just met him?
Some of the sternness leached from his features and was replaced by confusion.
Then how did you know about his cat dying?
Because we talked about it in the car. I pulled my fleece-lined flannel closer and crossed my arms against the cold. It's so sad. I really think his vet's office took advantage of the situation and the fact that Henry's here all alone. If he had more family nearby, I think he'd be able to make decisions with a clearer head. But being by yourself, it's hard to lose any part of your support system, even a 17-year-old blind, deaf cat with diabetes and cancer. I mean, I get it, but... What? What's wrong? Do I have something on my face? I wiped at my mouth because that's where Rex was staring as a ghost of a smile tugged at his lips. I hoped I hadn't inadvertently spittled while I spoke. Owen, the dentist from Fridays at the bar, spittled while he spoke sometimes. I still hadn't figured out how to tell him gently, so he just kept on spittling all over the bar top, which I'd taken to covering with napkins upon his arrival.
You...
Rex's gaze traced a path from my eyes to my nose, mouth, chin, then back up, lips parting like a lot of words were on the tip of his tongue. Ultimately, he just shook his head.
Never mind. Come with me.
Grabbing my hand in his giant paw, he tugged me forward, but my feet stalled as soon as I spotted two women hurrying into the church. Oh, no. I gestured to the two women walking in front of us. Green tank crop tops with the words Jason and Amy in red glitter on the back. Blue and green flannel shirts tied around their waists. Cut-off jean shorts, brown Stetson hats, and cowgirl boots.
What's wrong?
Rex looked over his shoulder at me. Was I supposed to wear cut-offs? I missed the sexy cowgirl memo. I glanced down at my jean-clad legs, dark red and green flannel, and so did Rex. I gave him an apologetic look as his eyes moved over my long double braid draped over my shoulders.
No, you didn't,
he said, putting his hand on my back and pressing me forward. No, I didn't what?
Miss the memo.
I...
What I mean is, there was no memo,
he said gruffly, looking harassed.
Come.
Guiding me around the side of the massive church to a side door that had been propped open, he closed it behind us as soon as we entered. We then walked down a long, nondescript hallway with peach-colored walls and tight-weave corporate carpet. Eventually, we arrived at what looked like a general-purpose meeting room. It didn't have a conference table, but rather a few gray folding tables pushed together in the center of the room with brown folding chairs surrounding it. Once we were inside, he closed that door, too. Then, pulling me around to face him, he let me go. But his arresting eyes held me in place. Taking a deep breath, he said,
I think I have a way to solve the divorce problem.
That had me standing straighter.
I can buy the story from your ex through a broker. Make him think he's selling it to a paper. That'll silence him as he won't be able to discuss it once he's sold it.
I could only stare at Rex as chaotic thoughts ping-ponged in my brain. This was not what I'd been expecting him to say. He wasn't finished.
We'll give an exclusive to the Austin Sentinel after our wedding. I have a contact there who's friendly, and I'll proactively bring it up. Without your ex able to contradict the story, our version of events will be what people hear. Problem solved.
Stepping away from Rex, I shook my head. My hands came to my forehead, but then I remembered I had makeup on and dropped them. I didn't want to smudge anything important. Rex, I don't want you to do that.
Which part?
I certainly don't want Declan to profit from...
Other than the money part, which part is a problem for you?
He asked brusquely, reminding me of Kaylee and her mad lawyery skills. I could see we were about to negotiate, so I ticked my concerns off on my fingers. First, you shouldn't have to pay for my mistakes. Second, Declan is a sleazeball. I don't want him making any money off me or you. Third, I don't want you lying to the press to...
Would I have to lie?
He cut in smoothly, his gaze straying from my face to conduct a quick sweep of my outfit again. I glanced down, feeling a prick of uncertainty under his inspection. Fiddling with one of my long braids, I asked, Are you sure I look okay?
Perfect,
he said curtly. His gaze, now cool and aloof, returned to mine.
You said you didn't know about your ex's illegal activities, so why would we lie to the press?
I didn't know about Declan's lies. I found out when... A tight band squeezed my chest, and I breathed through it at the memory that caused it, forcing the feelings of bitterness and betrayal down, down, down. Calmly, I started again. I found out when I was arrested. He lifted his chin, inspecting me. I couldn't read his expression, but I thought maybe he looked interested? Interest mixed with some empathy?
Do you mind telling me the whole story?
I glanced at the door behind him. Do we have time? Aren't you a groomsman? He wore boots like me, but also black pants and a white shirt with brown suspenders, which did amazing things to highlight the broadness of his shoulders. It was a good look for him.
It starts at 7:30. I don't need to be anywhere until 7. We have time.
My stomach cinched itself tight as we stared at each other. I hadn't planned on telling him the whole story, just enough to make it clear how bad he'd look if we pretend married. Rex's eyebrows lowered a scant millimeter, and his gaze grew less careful, less aloof, more open, imploring.
"What happened, Abby?"
he asked, his voice deep and soft and lacking in all judgment. Lifting my eyes to the speckled, paneled ceiling, I turned from Rex and meandered into the room. "Well, it's a funny story, actually."
It wasn't funny. It was tragic and made me look pathetic.
"But if the shoe fits..."
I met Declan at the bar. He was a patron when I first started. Used to flirt with me.
"I thought you started at 16.
Rex's voice sounded close, like he'd followed me into the room. I didn't turn. Instead, I walked to the nearest of the folding chairs and took a seat, already weary. I did. And Walker banned him from the bar because he wouldn't stop.
"Good."
Rex picked up a chair and brought it close to mine, sitting directly in front of me. Working to ignore his steady perusal, I plowed forward numbly. Declan showed up a few years later. I'd just graduated from high school and was working at the bar full time.
"You were 18?
Yes.
And how old was he?
31. Rex turned his face away, but not fast enough. I'd caught the flare of disgust behind his eyes, the clenching of his jaw, and my lungs felt too tight. Stuff it down, down, down. Crossing my arms, I maintained an unperturbed exterior. He started coming in on days he knew Walker wouldn't be there, and I liked him. He was funny, charming. He asked about me. Seemed interested in everything I said, like I was a freaking genius or something. I paused here to send Rex a humorous, self-deprecating